أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم مصطفى محمد. وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، روحي وارواح الأرمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. Brothers and sisters, tonight we are going to be discussing, going a little further in that hadith of the Prophet of Allah. We have finished the first part of our discussion in which Allah told the Prophet in his spiritual instructions to hate the dunya. Now we get to one which is even a little bit tougher for us sometimes, which is hating the people of the dunya. Hadith. Ya Ahmad, abghid ad-dunya wa ahlaha. O Ahmad, hate the dunya and the people of the dunya. This is one of those politically incorrect statements of the Ahlul Bayt. Apologists, Muslims, might start trying to hit out the door and escape. You know, no, they don't say. No, they say, hate people in the dunya, what does that mean? Whereas for us as Muslims, let's settle down, relax, let's see what the Ahlul Bayt actually mean. Run away from it, be scared of it, no. This is a principle of self-building. What do they mean when they say hating the people of the world? Okay? So before I begin, right, just a question for me to ask myself and you guys to ask yourselves. Are we willing to be retrained along the lines of the Ahlul Bayt? Are we ready for them? Do we submit to Islam when we want to do self-building, be those elite soldiers of the Imam? Are we willing to have those values which we may have acquired, been taught, things that we accepted as true, willing to change those and come back to the path of the Ahlul Bayt to be those soldiers of the Imam or not? Even before we start. Because this topic is one which is addressed many times in ayat of Quran and in hadith. There's some people, as soon as they hear hadith, they, you know, it's not in the Quran. Brothers, slow down one second. Everything is in Quran. The details of salat in Quran, details of fasting in Quran, details of hajj in Quran, it's in the sunnah. So quick to run away from Quran. Is it in the Quran? This is in Quran also. In the Quran. So now the verse of Quran, one of the verses which talks about this, it's Surah 53, and it's verses number 29 and 30. This principle of self-building. فَأَعْرِضْ عَمَّنْ تَوَلَّى عَنْ ذِكْرِنَا. Turn away from the one who has turned away from our remembrance. وَلَمْ يُرِدْ إِلَّا الْحَيَاةَ الدُّنْيَا. And does not want anything except for the life of this world. أَحْلُ الدُّنْيَا. ذَلِكَ مَبْلَغُهُمْ مِنَ الْعِلْمِ. This is the only, the extent, the furthest extent of their knowledge. The person who only wants the life of this world, turn away from that person. That's the farthest their knowledge has reached. It's also mentioned in the hadith, again, in the same hadith of the Prophet of Allah in another section. Right? And again, there's many hadith about this, but just so that we hear these hadith. This one is where Allah is talking. He says, Ya Ahmad, laysa kullu man qala uhibbu Allah ahabbani. He says, O Ahmad, it is not the case that everyone who says, I love Allah, loves me. It's not the case that everybody who says, I love Allah, loves me. He says, unless, hatta, and he mentions 26 different traits that a believer has to have if they want to say, I love Allah, truthfully. One of them, وَيَفِرَّ مِنَ الْعَاسِينَ فِرَارًا. And he runs away from the sinners, or running away. If I wanted to do justice to this sentence in Arabic, يَفِرُّ مِنَ الْعَاسِينَ فِرَارًا, you know what the kind of running away is? Imagine if you went into your bedroom, you saw a rattlesnake on the bed. How would you get out of the room? That kind, يَفِرُّ مِنَ الْعَاسِينَ فِرَارًا is that. Yeah. Running away from the sinners, not only Ahlul Bayt. Okay, so this thing we still haven't come to what is the explanation of this hadith. What do they mean by that? We haven't come to that yet. But let's accept the concept from Islam and say that if I want to work on myself, I can't just be a regular Muslim. I need to be taught, I need to be trained, I need to refocus my values, have my mind reformatted. Okay, another thing that comes to mind is that when we hear hadith like this, somebody like me, somebody who has apologist tendencies. You know, one of those Muslims, quick to run and start apologizing for Islam. I'm sorry I'm a Muslim, you know, please forgive me. Islam means peace. Right? And these kind of Muslims. Is that we think that if others hear these words of the Ahlul Bayt, they'll run away from the deen. So you can't say things like that. I don't care if the Prophet said it. You'll scare people before we hear the explanation. Brothers and sisters, we don't believe that. We believe that Islam is the religion of the fitrah. We believe that all of mankind has a divine nature Allah put in them. We believe the path of the Ahlul Bayt is a path which you can explain to other human beings. They can at least understand you. Even if they don't agree with you, they're not able to submit to you, but they can at least understand the logic behind what you're saying. So we don't have to run away from that, apologize for that, try and find a way out of Islam. No. Because Islam is a religion that everybody's ready for. It doesn't mean you go into all of the details about Islam either, though, when you first are talking to somebody. You know, I'm a convert to Islam, so I come into your center the first time. You're like, Assalamu alaikum, brother, how are you doing? Wa alaikum assalam. And you take out the Risala of Ayatollah Sistani, you're like, bam, act on this and you will be saved. You know, I was like, no. Just give me a giant book. No, for me, I'm not ready for that. You talk to me about those beautiful concepts and ideas, right? Slowly, you get me in there. But don't apologize for Islam. Don't run away from Islam and what it is. Hadith now. Hadith goes something like this in Arabic. لَوْ عَلِمَ النَّاسِ مَحَاسِنَا كَلَامِنَا لَتَّبِعُونَا. If the people knew the beauty of our words, they would follow us. This is words of Ahlul Bayt. This hadith is from Imam Ridha. If the people of we believe this religion, if others only knew what Islam said, they would follow Islam. We don't have to run, apologize, back down, find a way for Islam to fit in, correct Islam, humanize Islam. This is another dangerous tendency that's going around. We humanize Islam. Islam was, you know, kind of uncivilized. So, but it doesn't mean though everybody that hears the message of Islam is going to become Muslim. We don't think, if I don't change Islam, well, everybody's not going to become Muslim. Islam, the religion of the Prophet of Allah, that religion everybody won't accept. There are some bad people out there. Ayat of Quran, Surah 17, and it's verse number 82. وَنُنَزِّلُ مِنَ الْقُرْآنِ مَا هُوَ شِفَاءٌ وَرَحْمَةٌ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ. We send down, we reveal from this Qur'an that which is a shafa, it's a cure, a healing for the believers and a mercy for the believers. And the same Qur'an, وَلَا يُزِيدُ الظَّالِمِينَ إِلَّا خَسَارًا. But this same Qur'an, which is a mercy and a cure and a healing for believers, does not increase the oppressors of dhalimeen illa khasara, except in loss. So it's not that everybody's going to accept the message of Quran. No, expect that. There's some bad people out there too. Make Islam fit into everybody. But if you explain Islam properly to a regular person, at least they'll find Islam appealing. They might be too weak to be a Muslim, too weak to practice, too weak to go against the grain. You know, they're monkey see, monkey do. I stay in society, I do everything everybody else does. But at least they'll understand the beauty of this religion. Okay, so we believe that about Quran. So now, what do we mean when we're saying hate the dunya and the people of the dunya? And that this is something that we need for our self-building. First of all, when we say hate, it doesn't mean we hate the whole world. You know, we're ready to burn the whole world down. They're all our enemies. No, we don't mean that. We don't mean that. I'll give you the Quranic backing for this. It doesn't mean that we're going to go, you know, the little kid sitting in here, he's going to go to school tomorrow, he's like, you guys are all the enemy. No. You see what Ahlul Bayt said? Okay? We're not saying that all of mankind are our enemies, but there are some enemies. We have four enemies for us, for mankind, on the path of self-building. Four sets of enemies. Four sets of enemies. The first of those enemies, Shaitan. And Shaitan is an enemy of our dunya and our akhirah. We've talked about that ayat of Quran the other day. The next enemy for us is the dunya. When we're fooled by the dunya, we're tricked by the dunya, we do the wrong things because of the dunya. The third enemy is our own nafs. Our nafs which whispers to us, which gets us to do wrong things and bad things. That's the enemy. And the last enemy are other people. There are some bad people out there. They've been there from the beginning of time, fighting against the Imam, fighting against Islam, fighting against the various prophets. If you look in the Quran, these people are identified very clearly. The first people to raise the standard of fighting against Islam, and according to some ulama, the biggest obstacle to human beings worshipping Allah were actually other human beings. What are they called in Quran? Surah 9 and verse number 12. Surah 9, verse number 12. A'immatul kufr, the leaders of disbelief. They know what they're doing. They don't like Islam. They hate this message which is there to save the majority of mankind. The other one that's mentioned is the council. You'll find this many, many times in the Quran. The powers that be, right? They're called al-mala. Surah 7 and verse number 60. But look, many times in the Quran, when you're finding the first people who will fight against Islam is these leaders, the council, the chieftains. They're the first people to go. The other set of people, again, Surah 17 and verses 16, Surah 34 and verses 34, those who are made to live easy lives. There's some people who are benefiting by this corrupt and oppressive system which rules the world at that time and now. They don't want Islam. Those who are made to live easy lives. Not everybody who's made to live an easy life. There's some rich people who come to Islam. But there's some very, very wealthy people who don't like Islam. And lastly, the arrogant. And this group is all the same group of people. All the same group. One of them is the arrogant. Verse Surah 7 and it's verse number 76. Again and again you'll find that the first people to fight against the Anbiya were these four groups of people. We're actually one group. Those in positions of power and authority benefiting by that corrupt system and how it ruled. The other set of people who are enemies of Islam, and we don't apologize that, no, they're enemies of Islam, are their willing slaves. There's some people who are slaves of that system and like that system. I'll give you an example. There's a book called Kitab al-Irshad. Look in that book where you're talking about Amir al-Mu'mineen and the Battle of Uhud. In the Battle of Uhud, Amir al-Mu'mineen, after he downs the enemy, the flag was given to a tribe called Bani Abd al-Dar. A man named Talha bin Talha was their toughest guy. They gave him, and then after that, his brothers, his relatives, the flag. And Amir al-Mu'mineen went through those guys like butter, just cut those guys down. After he finished cutting those guys down, he says that a slave picked up the flag, this huge slave, foaming at the mouth, reading Kitab al-Irshad, red eyes, and he comes to fight Amir al-Mu'mineen. And Amir al-Mu'mineen dispatches him to the hellfire too. But you know what? In Islam, if a slave accepts Islam before his master, he's free. If a slave, he's there to free the slaves. But some people are willing slaves. They didn't have the tawfiq to be Saddam Hussein otherwise. They'd be Saddam Hussein. So they're willing slaves. They're also fighting. But now, what do we believe about the majority of mankind? Our neighbors, our friends, those people who are out there. The vast, vast majority of mankind. We believe that they just don't know about Islam. Ayat of Quran now. Aktharuhum la yaqilun. Most of them don't think. Surah 5 and verse number 103. أكثرهم لا يعلمون. Most of them don't know. They're ignorant. Surah 6, verse number 37. أكثرهم يجهلون. Most of them are ignorant. Surah 5, verse number 111. So the vast majority of mankind are not the enemies. They're the people we're trying to save. They are uninformed about Islam. Instead of us pointing fingers and talking about how bad everybody else is, let's think about ourselves a little bit. How much invitation do we do to Islam? Are my actions such that someone who sees them would be drawn to Islam or not? So We're here the same way that it said in Ziyarat Arba'in. We're here to save mankind. We're their best friend. This is from Ziyarat Arba'in. وَبَذَلَ مُحْجَتَهُ فِيكَ That the Imam gave his blood in your way لِيَسْتَنْقِذَ عِبَادَكَ In order to save your servants, Allah, مِنَ الْجَهَانَ To save them from ignorance. Everything else that's out there besides Islam is ignorance. He's there to save them. And we're there to save them. So what happened is the vast majority of mankind are people we want to save, but these people are also slaves to the system. We want to be careful about being slave to the system ourselves. You know how to get somebody to become a slave to the system? First, you become a slave of your own nafs. First, you become a slave of your own nafs. If you look the last 50 years or so, in America, the television was not this bad. Radio was not this bad. Values were not this destroyed. It's deliberate. What happens when you have people like that? I become a slave of my own nafs. I follow what my nafs wants. That makes me a slave of other people because my nafs wants money, my nafs wants a house, my nafs wants a car. According to the limited, flawed way of looking at the dunya, that's in the hands of the rich and powerful, al-mutrafun, right? Al-mala, all of those guys, that's in their hands. So automatically, I'm a slave to them because I don't see the hand of God at work. I don't see that Allah's providing risk. I see Mr. Smith with the factory. He's giving risk. So it's natural I submit to this person. Now if I know that secret, what I do is I deliberately make other people become slave of their nafs. Slavery to Allah will free them. Slavery to their nafs imprisons them. We're here to save the rest of mankind, but first we have to save ourselves by being those slaves of Allah and those soldiers of the Imam. So just to back this argument up with a couple of verses of Quran, and then after that, to move on to our topic. What happens is that slavery of the nafs, which is creates this oppressive system which rules the world, this is a common culture between the oppressed and the oppressors. They're all slaves of the nafs. It's a common culture. When you look in the verses of Quran in which the inhabitants of hell are talking to one another, you'll see that these guys all had one culture, and that was the culture of slavery of the nafs. So, what does the Quran say? This is surah number 68 and verse number 7. The second one I'm going to recite is surah 68 and verse number 14. It says, فَلَا تُطِعِ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ Don't obey those who give the lie to the truth. Don't obey those who give the lie to the truth. Then it continues. Why are people obeying them? An kana dha malin wa banin, because they have property and sons. They have social position. That's what makes them in charge. That's what it was in the old days. It's still that. Social position makes people in charge. So now for me as a believer, someone who doesn't believe in that world culture, who believes in Allah as my master, I shouldn't get intimidated by the dunya of others. I shouldn't get impressed, overwhelmed, lose hope. No, because I know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is in control of the universe. I'm not worried about these things. The only thing I'm worried about is doing my duty to Allah. So I'm unimpressed, the same way that Amir al-Mu'mineen said, that the dunya is not worth more than the sneeze of a goat. The whole civilization, which is built on love of this world, in my eyes, is not worth more than the sneeze of a goat. That's what it means to be a soldier of the Imam. And then, with that belief, you make effort, you can do miracles. You can do miracles. One tiny ayat to show this, right? Surah 38 and verse number 11. This verse was revealed in the time of Mecca, when the believers were in Mecca. So you know they were oppressed, small group, they didn't have a lot of numbers. At this time, see how Allah talks about the powers that be. He says, جُنْدٌ مَا هُنَالِكَ مَحْزُومٌ مِنَ الْأَحْزَابِ Talking about the Meccans who were there controlling everything. And the Prophet, in such small numbers, he says it's a tiny army over there, way off in the distance, of these tribes that have been banded together. The Prophet of Allah, unimpressed by that civilization, even though he's in the midst of it, unafraid. All I have to do is do what my taklif is. Okay, so for me, when we say Ahlul Dunya, who do we mean by Ahlul Dunya? By Ahlul Dunya, we mean, because we're saying to hate the people of the dunya, meaning that we're going to find out how exactly we deal with them for self-development. But who do we mean? We're saying those people who are not following the path of the Ahlul Bayt, the majority of mankind who we want to save, those people we care about, those servants of God, those people are Ahlul Dunya. If I'm not practicing Islam properly, I'm Ahlul Dunya. If I'm not following the path of the Ahlul Bayt, if I'm a non-Muslim, Ahlul Dunya. So now, with these Ahlul Dunya, what are my instructions for self-building? What do they want me to do with them? It doesn't mean abandoning the dunya, not interacting. When we're saying hate the people of the dunya, it doesn't mean we don't interact with them. We do interact. Actually, we want to invite them to Islam. Verse of Quran now. This is, oh, I didn't even write down the verse of Quran, the ayat of Quran. I'll have to bring it for you tomorrow, inshallah. Allah says in the Quran, He says that Allah did not forbid you from those who did not fight you because of the religion. Allah didn't forbid you from those people. You do have some people who you're opposed to, but Allah didn't forbid you from everybody. And did not make you leave your homes. Allah did not forbid you from being kind to them. How should I interact with the people of the dunya? Be kind to them and deal with justice to them. As Muslims, you want to invite others to the path of the Ahlul Bayt by your actions before your tongue. Sometimes you have Muslims, you know, they do so many wrong things to non-Muslims. I was in one community where the Muslims were known for, they would set their buildings on fire and then claim arson insurance. Right? Well, other Muslims, they remember they would be Muslim car thieves. So what happened is, if they saw a tasbih in your car, they would know you were Muslim, so they would leave you alone. And they would go around to the other cars, the non-Muslims, and steal their cars. That's their way of spreading Islam. So instead of Muslim people becoming Muslims, the Germans learned to buy tasbih and put it in their car so they could be safe from these Muslims. I was with another Muslim brother, and this Muslim brother was so used to mistreating the non-Muslims, he would go into the store and he's like, I'm about to liberate this, and steal from the store. But instead of calling it stealing, I could call it liberating. I'm about to liberate. So, brother, this is a Muslim story you're liberating thing. Right? Such a habit of stealing. Right? So Muslims, our behavior should be impeccable. We should be people of honor, dignity, right? Inviting others to it. So it doesn't mean that we don't interact with society. But when we do interact with society, the Ahlul Dunya, it doesn't mean we lose our values though. We maintain our Islamic values. We're strong in our interaction. What happens is that sometimes Muslims, in order to interact, will start to let their values slide. I'll give you an example. Start to let their values slide. Whereas a Muslim, you should be strong enough to maintain your values and keep on going. A man was there in the time of one of the Imams, and he told the Imam, he said that I've heard that those people who are, die in the land of the Kuffar, those people will be raised with the Kuffar. The Imam asked him, he said that, when you're in the land of the Kuffar, are you able to call to us? Are you able to maintain your values? He said, yes. He said, when you're in the Muslim lands, are you able to call to us? The man said, no. He said, if you die in the land of the Kuffar, you one Muslim, you'll be raised as an ummah. One Muslim will be raised as an ummah. The same way in Surah 16, and in verse number 120, then Allah says that Ibrahim is an ummah, we will be raised as an ummah if we are able to maintain our values. So maintaining our values. So like I like to say, if you're, because we have instructions from Ahlul Bayt of visiting the sick, for instance. Even when it comes to the brothers, obviously for our own brothers, but when it comes to the brothers and sisters of Ahlul Sunnah, visiting their sick, visiting their masajid, we have hadith about these things. So now when you're visiting them, when you're praying in their masajid, if some maraji allow you to pray in jama'ah also, when you're praying there, but I want to see that we maintain our values. So that means you bring your morin. I like to pray in jama'at, you know, bring my morin, you know, take that bad boy down. Allahu Akbar, right behind the imam, right? I'm not going to change, I'm not going to hide, I'm not going to try and be different. I am a follower of Amirul Mu'mineen. I'm happy about that. I'm different. So we try to maintain our values, not change. Okay? But there's something else, though, too, and this one's a little bit tough. We do treat them differently than we treat other believers. We do treat... Sometimes some of the things, instructions out of the elevator, are going to be different than the rest of the building. We're treating everybody kind, everybody with justice. But do we treat our brothers, Ahlul Akhirah, the same way we treat Ahlul Dunya? No. Even though we're kind to everybody. I'll give you an example. This is from the time of Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. Our Imam, the Rawi, the person who's narrating the hadith, says that our Imam came, and in the middle of the night he's traveling, and he's carrying some bread on his shoulders. The bread spills on the ground, so he rushes forward. I mean, imagine if you were there with the Imam of your time, he takes that bread, and he starts helping the Imam put the bread back in the bag. When he does that, he asks the Imam, please allow me to take this bag and put it on my shoulder. The Imam says, no, I'm going to carry it out. I want to give it to the fuqara. I'm going to give it to the fuqara myself. So you and I, as soldiers of Imam Mahdi, when we want to give charity, we should give charity ourselves. Instead of only writing a check, visit the fuqara. Give to the fuqara. Help them, assist them. Brothers mentioned the idea of a soup kitchen. Wonderful. In the name of Islam, name of Ahlul Bayt. Wonderful. Something we can do. Okay. So now the Rawi says, I walk with the Imam. The Imam is carrying the bread and he's going to distribute it amongst the people. He goes and he gives, these people are sleeping. The Imam goes amongst them and he drops a piece of bread for each one of these individuals. I turn to the Imam, the Rawi. He says, these guys aren't Shia. These people you just gave in charge, they're not Shia. The Imam says, he says, if they were Shia, I would have given them salt also. If they were Shia, I would have treated them differently. I've treated them better. So now I want to share a personal story with you. Because sometimes we feel, if we don't treat everybody the same, nobody will become a Muslim. Opposite personal story. A friend of mine converted to Islam. And he was explaining why. He said that, I used to work in a store with these Muslims. He said, so whenever a customer would come in, they'd be friendly, kind, and stuff like that. But he said if a Muslim came in the store, the guy would come from behind the counter, so, hey, brother, how you doing? Maybe a hug, give the man some coffee. How you doing, bro? He said, so I would see this. I wanted to be one of the brothers. Islam isn't a race, right? Anybody can. If he had treated them the same, he would have taken away the incentive to become a Muslim. Don't apologize for Islam. You be kind to everybody. Another Muslim though. How you doing, man? You all right? That's to treat them differently, better. Okay? So we don't want to apologize for that. Now, for our instructions for our spiritual betterment, what they say in order to better ourselves is that in order to become those true soldiers of the Imam, we have to have a certain type of discipline. Discipline, if we want to go on the path of the Ahlul Bayt, it's not going to be easy. There are going to be, sometimes we have to have discipline. But brothers and sisters, for everything that you want to achieve in this world or the hereafter, you have to have discipline. One example from hadith now. That Imam Qadir alayhi salatu wasalam is explaining this. He says that the intelligent person, Al-Aqil, looks at the dunya and the people of the dunya. And he realizes you cannot achieve in the dunya illa bil mashaqqa, except with difficulty. And he looks at the hereafter and realizes you can't achieve the hereafter illa bil mashaqqa, except through difficulty. So he chooses the most lasting of the two with difficulty. Everybody who's achieved, you ask those who have achieved great things, everybody who's achieved has achieved it through having that discipline to going through some things that they didn't want to do, sacrificing a little bit. I remember one time, just off note, there was Dennis Rodman, who used to play on the Bulls. There used to be a team, Bulls, Chicago Bears, Michael Jordan. He used to be a rebounder. His name was Dennis Rodman. Okay? So Dennis Rodman left the Bulls and was traded to another team. And then he was on the Spurs. And they were asking Dennis Rodman as to the secret of his success. So he said that when we were on the Bulls, he said that we lifted more weights than anybody. Watched more film than anybody. In reality, the reason the Bulls won and they were the greatest was because they out-hustled the competition. You have to, whether you want the dunya or the hereafter, you've got to have discipline, you've got to sacrifice, you've got to make effort, you've got to strive. So now, for me as a believer, somebody wants to go on the path of the Ahlul Bayt, when it comes to Ahlul Dunya, I have to have that discipline. How? What do they say? They say that keep your contact with Ahlul Dunya to a minimum. Keep your contact with Ahlul Dunya to a minimum. So it doesn't mean you don't interact, you interact. It doesn't mean you're not kind, you're kind. But who do you choose for your dearest friends and companions? Who do you spend a lot of time with? Hadith now. This says that a man is on the religion of his friends. You pick up habits from your friends without even thinking about it. If I hang around with my own family, my accent changes without me even thinking about it. You pick up habits and traits from your friends. A man is on the religion of his friends. So should I be associating with everybody in the exact same manner? No. Not if I want to be on the spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt. So what are some of the things that happen to us if I associate more than is necessary with Ahlul Dunya? One of them is nifaq, hadith. One of the problems of associating more than I should with Ahlul Dunya is nifaq. Another one, hardness of the heart. My heart gets hard. Lack of humility before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's also something that happens. Shaitan comes around. Shaitan, Satan. Faith is forgotten. So for me, as someone who wants to be on the spiritual path of the Ahlul Bayt, who's told to hate the people of the dunya, we want to keep all of those teachings in mind, and then cut that interaction down to a minimum. We do invite others to the path, but we don't spend all of our time out there trying to invite. Most of our time with other mu'mineen, practicing people, surround myself with people who have the same values, so I'm reminded of God. Otherwise, then I tend to lose the way. Now we want to remember very briefly the Imam of our who died on this night. We ask Allah to help us to remember this Imam and to be like this Imam. We're now on the day that our Imam, around 1400 years ago, he passed away. After a couple of days of being in the bed, sick, this person was Asadullah al-Ghalib, the victorious lion of Allah, the champion of Khaybar, the champion who was able to save the Muslims in every battlefield. Now he is going to meet his Lord. And the Imam at this stage is so happy. For him, this is a victory. He says, Fustu wa Rabbil Kaaba, that I am victorious by the Lord of the Kaaba. For us as the Ummah, this is a loss. The same way that Angel Jibreel said, لَقَدْ تَهَدَّمَتْ وَاللَّهُ أَرْكَانُ الْهُدَىٰ, that the pillars of knowledge have become, the pillars have become demolished. But at the same time, for a middle mu'mineen, this is victory to be free from the dunya. So when we remember this sad time for a middle mu'mineen, the same way that the Ahlul Bayt do, we want to go back to Karbala. لَا يَوْمْ كَيَوْمَكَ يَا عَبَى عَبْدِ اللَّهِ. On the day of Karbala, Imam Hussein was also our Imam and he died. But at that stage, he didn't just get to die like Amir al-Mu'mineen died. Amir al-Mu'mineen died with his sons being around them. His brother wasn't there. He was able to make his wasiyah to his relatives. But Imam Hussein had to watch his family die, one after the other. On the day of Karbala, when nobody else was left, it was only Hazrat Abbas. He asked his brother for permission. He said, Ya Akhi, hal min rukhsa? Brother, do you give me permission to fight? The Imam said, but if you go, then my army is destroyed. He said, brother, I'm tired of life. I want to get revenge from hawla al-munafiqeen, from these munafiqeen. Imam Hussein cried. He said, then get some water for these children. The Imam then, Abbas went and admonished the enemy, tried to get them to come back to the right path. Saw that there was no effect, he came back and informed the Imam. At this time, the cries of Al-Atash of the children were loud. Abbas made one last dua. He darned his armor and he made one last dua that now I want to go over and fight. He said, Oh Allah, give me the tawfiq that I can at least bring back one water skin for these children. Abbas went over and waded into the enemy. There were 4,000 of them guarding the banks of the Euphrates. Abbas waded in fearlessly. Abbas got in, he was able to fill the water skin with water, and he dipped his hand to try and get a little bit of water and drink and quench his throat. فَتَذَكَّرَ عَتَشَ أَخِيهِ. He remembered the thirst of his brother, he cast the water down. After that, Abbas went and he now came out. Now I have the water skin, and he starts to ride to face the enemy. The enemy go and they attack him and they cut off Abbas's right hand. He said, Wallah, in qata'tum yamini, inni uhami abadan and dini. Even if you cut my right hand, I will defend my religion forever. They cut his left hand off. Finally, Abbas only has the water skin. He's hiding, trying to hold the water skin with his mouth. The enemy sees how much attention he's paying to the water skin, and they shoot the water skin. At that stage, they say that Abbas stopped. فَتَوَقَّفَ Abbas مُتَحَيَّرَ confused. I don't have arms to fight. I don't have a water skin to bring back. He stopped. The enemy surrounded him, and they split his head open. He fell to the ground. At this stage, they say that finally he called out for his brother for help. He said, Ya akha, adrik akhaq, oh brother, come and save your brother. But there's other traditions that say, no, even at this stage, he couldn't bring himself to ask for help. He said, Ya akhi, Ya Hussein, alayka minni as-salam. I pass you my final salams. We ask salam by the right of Muhammad wa ala Muhammad to make us the true soldiers of the Imam of our time. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa ala Muhammad to accept what was said and heard in his way. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa ala Muhammad to pray all of the maraja, all of the believers, all of the maraja and the leaders. Sayyidina Ali Khamenei, salawat.